Welcome to Cooking the Books, an interview series about food and fiction. I'm your host, Alia Dibodard.
And I'm your host, Fran Wild. Welcome, Chelsea Polk, to Cooking the Books.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. This is your debut novel, Witchmark, that is coming out from Tor and Tor.com, both of them, June 19th, which is very, very soon. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the book?
I live in Southern Alberta, and mostly what I've wanted to do with my life always has been writing and becoming a novelist. I actually started out by writing fan fiction, and that helped me build up my confidence. I got an idea for another story featuring some of my favorite characters. However, when I actually got down and started writing the idea, once it solidified, I realized that my favorite characters did not fit at all. So I went back to the drawing board, came up with original people to kind of fit into their slots, and then went for it. Just without a net, the original story, and it took me about 2 months to write. And then I spent the next year revising it, of course.
2 months is not a very long time.
I kind of feel like I was gripped by obsession when I was writing this book, and I was probably very difficult to talk to at that point because it was on my mind constantly. It was kind of like I had the whole story in my head, but it wasn't enough room in my head to actually hold it. So I was like Johnny Mnemonics the whole time.
Got it.
Witchmark is the story about an ex-army doctor who came back from the war. He has a secret healing power that he doesn't want anybody to know about it because the consequences will be bad. But he ends up getting exposed when an emergency case comes to his hospital when he's just getting off shift. And the result of him being exposed leads him to investigate the murder of the patient from the emergency. And it gets complicated after that. So it's like, and then the murders began, and then it gets complicated.
These are the best.
Yep. It's the best way to start a story with murder.
So, I mean, one of the things that I really like, because I'm like a total like 19th century, earliest 20th century buff, and I really like the way that you have this alternate history, which sort of resembles post-World War One, but has magic and technology at the same time. Can you talk a little on what you drew on for this world building and how you build the society? Was it all there in the first draft?
A lot of it was there in the first draft. You couldn't get the details out of me when I was writing it down. I was very much, you know, no info dumps, go, go, go. And so anytime you actually are informed about anything about my fantasy world, it is because my editor made me do it. I was heavily influenced by the idea of World War One, but I was thinking about the period afterwards when all of the men came home and there was no work for them. They were out of work. They were abandoned basically by their army service. Their dear friends and people that they'd known for years had died in horrible trench warfare. And to top it all off, lots of them had PTSD and it was ignored. And I was like, what if they didn't do that? And so I wound up coming up with this idea.
What if they didn't ignore the PTSD?
Yeah, I came up with this idea of a psychiatry movement that wasn't based on the mental hygiene movement of the late 19th, early 20th century, which is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And decided that they knew very well that the men had been deeply affected by battle. They wanted to help, but there wasn't really enough resources to go around. Mm. And I caught a little bit of the inspiration for a lot of the setting actually in a Sarah Waters book called The Paying Guests, which I had read while I was percolating my ideas on, because it's set in the same time period. In London, though mine is in an imaginary country, but it had the feel that I wanted. So I paid special attention to the details that she had in her book and researched them for my book.
Okay. It's certainly a very, I mean, it's a very textured world, and I really also like the whole hospital subplots. And I mean, it is an understaffed and not always very well functioning hospital, but they're trying.
They're trying very hard.
Yeah, exactly, which they didn't really do. And I mean, post-World War I, like, soldier rehabilitation is sort of reading the little book of horrors. Yeah, no.
I think it's something that I never mentioned in the book, but one of the things that I ran an assumption on was, okay, there is a universal healthcare system in place. I didn't want to have the drama of huge medical bills, but I did want to have the idea that because they had to carefully budget the money that they received in order to deliver care, it's reflected in the hospital itself, in that only some of it is wired for aether, which is my equivalent to electricity, and some of it has gas, and there's no elevator, and the building is old, and there's just not enough money to go around, and they're trying desperately to find the funds to perform the duty of care that they feel they have towards these soldiers who are all deeply, deeply traumatized.
In addition to the hospital re-envisioning and other things that struck me from the beginning with the story are the smells. You open with smells, also with food, and both of them have sort of a memory function and a way to draw people in, but food also has a big social function in Witchmark. How it's served as a sign of caring, replenishment for drawn magic, and as a social divider. Can you talk a bit about how you approached the food of your alternate history?
One of the things that was really important to me about the food of Witchmark was that magicians rely heavily, heavily on a high-calorie diet because their magic basically draws upon their own life force, and in order to replenish it, they need calories. They need a lot of calories. A magician basically is looking at a 4,000 calorie diet, and that's just if he's sitting around and performing magic every once in a while. So I had that factor to be very important. And then the other thing that I did was, when I was doing my more general world building, is I wanted to think about class divisions and cuisines. And so I thought about the availability of food, what was cheap, what was expensive, what was valued, what was considered poverty food. And one of the things that I did, because the city of Kingston is actually sitting at about 53 north latitude, if we dropped it on an Earth-like planet, as I made it so that there were lots and lots and lots of crab. So it's easy to get. So it's poor people food, which is, you know, the opposite of us and our $40 Dungeness crabs today. The other thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to make it so that sharing a meal was kind of a, not really an intimacy, but kind of a compact between the two of you to sit down and communicate with each other and to not just share food, but to share like stories, experiences, information, and just to become closer to each other.
Okay. Well, that's I know that the sharing of tea or a beverage has similar effects in our version of reality, but in your alternate reality, it also has more to do with sort of power and social standing also.
Mm-hmm. There's various layers of kind of the etiquette and custom that's going on.
Yes. Did you like the way that I worded that so very carefully?
Yes. because I was thinking about how Miles's sister, when she comes onto the scene,
and who's Miles again?
Miles is the main character. He's the doctor with the healing powers.
Okay.
When Miles' sister appears on the scene, she is very often providing food to Miles. There's one point where she actually walks up to his office in the hospital with a basket full of food so that they can eat lunch. Mm-hmm. And they could have gone out with some social constraints and some assumptions going on, because Miles' sister's, well, she's famous. But her bringing him food was her basically trying to extend like an olive branch to be peaceful. Like, let's eat together and hash this out. You don't sit down to eat with your enemy. You don't accept food from someone that you don't like.
Mm. And it's also something that she brings from their shared childhood.
Yes.
As well. And a very deliberate move.
Because she's bringing him things that he used to love. She's actually kind of calling upon the relationship that they had as children, which was deeply caring and very connected to each other.
Awesome. Thank you.
We have a question from the book Smugglers. Witchmark has a really elaborate, in-depth world building, all the more remarkable considering, is it a novella or a novel actually?
It's a novel. It's on the short side. It's about 85,000 words.
Okay. So considering its short length, do you plan on writing more stories set in this world? I mean, I already know the answer to this question. I am sure our listeners want to hear it too.
I am writing the sequel for Witchmark right now.
Yay.
I am at the end where everything comes together in a great crashing horrible heap, and it's a lot of fun. the story continues actually with Miles' sister taking up the torch of the narrative for the second book, because where Witchmark is a fantasy story with a murder mystery and a family saga thrown in, and then, you know, add a decent pinch of romance to all of that. Grace's story is a political drama with a lot of intrigue, and a romance with, I wouldn't say the wrong person, but with an unusual person. She has a romance with a journalist who is in a position to really, really hurt her politically if she wants to, because she knows where all of the secrets are buried. And I'm hoping that people enjoy it, because it's all about the consequences of what happens at the end of the first book.
Ooh, and political intrigue and FF romance. I think you get me there.
I wasn't really expecting the story that I wound up getting, but I really, really like it. I like how it's all women. When I talk about Storm Song, I actually say that it's what you get when you mash Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom with the UK version of House of Cards and make all the primary characters women.
I am here for that.
Yes, I'm a fan. Okay, we have another question from the Book Smugglers. And this is, they ask the best questions. We ask great questions. They ask amazing questions. They said, "We love book wrecks. And since you wrote a lovely romance between Miles and Tristan, can you recommend other stories with LGBT romance that have inspired you?"
This is going to sound really funny, but I really, really love the LGBT, the MM romances that, it starts with a novel called Takeover. The author's name is Anna Szabo.
And
one of the things that I really love about Takeover and the sequels is that they're very deeply grounded as career people in the romances. Like, they have their jobs, they're good at their jobs, they're ambitious at their jobs, but they also have these connections with the other men in their lives that range from friendship to rivalry to the romance that they can't have for whatever silly reason they can't have it until the end of the book. So I would definitely recommend the Takeover series by Anna Szabo. The other author that I need to talk about is K.J. Charles. K.J. Charles writes historical queer romance. She has the straight up, this is historical Regency kind of things going on, but she also has these wonderful historical period fantasy MM romances that she writes. And I love them. I really do.
They're amazing.
I have to talk about Alexis Hall.
Okay.
Alexis Hall wrote a book a few years ago called For Real. And it is an MM romance. It is a BDSM romance. And it is one of the most beautiful pieces of writing I have ever read. I envy it completely. Even as I am falling in love with the characters, even as I am soaring and plummeting with them, I am taken away by how good he is at writing.
Okay. Now, where does Witchmark fall in the sort of, in the scheme of things? It's adult.
It's an adult fantasy.
Okay.
So this is the two-pronged question of, this is going to really depend on your answer. you can answer yes or no to the first question, and then I have a backup one. So are you a cook and or a foodie?
I love food and I love cooking, and I get to do it sometimes.
Okay, so what kind of things do you enjoy cooking then?
I'd say like the most used tools in my kitchen are my chef knife and my saute pan. I'm always going to them first. I usually wind up cooking things with like a lot of fresh vegetables inside them. You cannot tear me away from cheese. I love cheese. So if you're going to eat with me, it might be vegetarian, even though I'm not a vegetarian. It's going to have a lot of veggies in it. It's going to have a lot of different seasoning blends. I use a base of vegetables, and then I'll be like, what is this like with basil? Okay. What is this like with barbecue rub? I'm a spice junkie. I have a spice shop in my neighborhood, and it's dangerous. I can't walk in there unless I have $50 to spend.
These ones.
Yep.
So is there any particular memorable meals that...
One of the things that I do every year around the Christmas season is, of course, I have a shared Christmas meal with friends and family. But the other thing that I do is I always wind up cooking something that is just for me. And I basically decide, what do I want? And I'll go nuts. I set myself a budget of $100. And that includes the alcohol that I'm drinking, like whatever wine it is that I'm going to have. But I will buy a prime rib if that's what I decide that I want. Basically because I have seasonal affective disorder. So the winter solstice is really important to me. It's the darkest point of the year, but it's also where it turns around. And I always celebrate that with a really excellent meal. My last one had, it was the prime rib that I was talking about. I decided that I really wanted to try a rub with coffee. It turned out excellent.
just like ground coffee on it?
Yeah, the spice rub had a lot of pepper and a lot of garlic and a lot of ground coffee, and I just kind of coated it in this. And I did it the usual way. I browned it in a pan. I finished it in the oven. What I did was I turned on the oven to 400, and then I put it in the oven, and I turned the oven off, and I came back in 15 minutes, and it was perfect. It wasn't a very big prime rib.
If you want to eat it by yourself.
I ate the leftovers with slices of fresh basil wrapped up with horseradish and mustard, and I just basically would go into the fridge, I would grab a slice, I would like line it with horseradish, or I would line it with mustard, and then I would put basil leaves on it, I would roll that up and eat it like a barbarian. It was so good.
it sounds fantastic. I'm getting hungry all over again. And I have had dinner today. Am I allowed to ask about the fountain pens, or do we have
Yes, you should totally ask about the fountain pens.
So, you are a fountain pen person?
I am a fountain pen person.
Can we talk about, you know, what you like about fountain pens, your favorite kind of fountain pens, your inks, you know, just geeking out?
I really love fountain pens basically because of the action of the nib against the paper. I like a nice smooth nib. I like the finest nib I can get. And mostly what I've worked with is steel nibs. So that makes my favorite fountain pen the Twisby Echo with an extra fine nib.
Yeah, I fully agree. It is the best pen.
It is a great pen. I do want to try a gold nib if I can get my hands on a Japanese extra fine gold nib pen. I was thinking about maybe the Pilot Vanishing Point. As kind of the dream pen. And I have a very small ink collection. I love bottled ink. I love piston-filled pens, which is why I really love the Twisby Echo. But what I find is that I am kind of a boring person when it comes to ink. I do have like some beautiful glitter inks. I have some interesting shading inks. I have 6 different shades of blue in a 12-bottle collection. But my everyday carry go-to pen is my Twisby Echo with the extra fine nib and Aurora Black ink. I am so boring.
No, you're a traditionalist. You know,
I mean, it's going to be that.
I'm more of a 580 person than I am an Echo person, but I totally get you on, like, once you find that ink that works for you, for me, it's Hosuku Blue ink, and it's just my one and true forever ink, and I might have several bottles stockpiled. I totally get sticking with what works, because it works.
I have 6 fountain pens. 3 of them are Twisbys. 2 of them are Lamys, and then I have another pen that I bought from eBay for like $3 that I tried to put a Zebra G flex nib in, but that was a big failure. It didn't actually work. I couldn't actually get the nib in all the way.
I've heard the Zebra are kind of tough to fit into other pens. I'm like a Twisby XF person. Mine is almost empty, as a matter of fact.
Now, Aliette, I noticed that you have successfully shifted cooking the books over to penning the books, but I'm going to shift us back.
Okay.
Nice try.
We noted that I asked for permission.
You can't cook a fountain pen. It won't work. Paul would have to clean up too much of the kitchen after that. But
well, I can use it to write my recipes before I cook them.
I have another question from the book smugglers. You just exhausted yourself doing powerful magic, and now you need to eat loads to replenish your strength. What would you devour?
I think the very first thing that I would do, actually, before eating is I would get a glass of water with lemon juice, a little bit of extra sugar, and a little bit of extra salt, just to make sure that I didn't faint while I was cooking.
So you'd cook?
I'd cook.
Okay.
I think probably because I would be able to consume a bigger volume. It would probably depend on the time of day. I'm very much a time of day is time for this kind of food. So if I'd exhausted myself with magic in the morning, then what I am making is I'm making a pot of steel cut oats. I'm making a pot of steel cut oats with cardamom and a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of vanilla added in. And then I am sitting there with my lemon salted sugar water, and I am drinking it while I'm waiting for it to cook, because steel cutouts take about a half hour. If it's lunchtime, I am reaching for a grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup. It is my favorite lunch. It always has been, ever since I was a little kid. And, you know, it's like if somebody wants to cheer me up, they'll they just have to run off and get me a thing of tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich, and then just let me read a book while I read, and I will recharge at that point. If it's dinner, then I'm probably going to start a pan with a little olive oil, some onions, some garlic, some zucchini, some mushrooms, whatever else I have in the fridge, top it off with tomatoes, and then fill it up with a tomato sauce, sir pasta into it, probably the swirly rotinis because they're my favorite, and I'm kind of a pasta dummy. I don't really know what's supposed to go with what. And then just let it simmer until the pasta is cooked and the sauce is kind of giving itself a little bit of the guts to not be too runny. And then I'm going to sit there and I'm going to eat that. And if it's 10 o'clock at night, I'm going to bake a cake because that is when that's when I bake. I bake at night because my apartment is so hot.
Okay. I have a follow-up question, which is one of your magicians. You can pick any one of the three major characters for whom to tell me their favorite food for replenishing their energy.
For Grace, she always wants an apple. Apples are her favorite food.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, part of that is because Kingston is absolutely filthy with apples. They grow on every street. They're part of the Kingston tradition. And so they're everywhere. You can just, in the right season, you can just pick one off a branch and keep walking down the road. And you're like standing in front of the stock exchange. That's how many apple trees are in Kingston. But she loves them. She's loved them ever since she was a child. It was her first solid food was applesauce. And then it was just the end. It's apple juice, apple pie, apple butter. Just plain old apples. The very first time she got drunk was drinking jacked apple cider. This is the long time, always a favorite. Apples are Grace's tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches.
Okay. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where can we find you and the book this summer? So obviously the book will just have been released.
The book comes out on June the 19th. And then a couple of days later, I'm flying to Minneapolis, Minnesota to attend 4th Street Fantasy.
Yay!
And then I'm having my book launch at Majors and Quinn on Hennepin Avenue, I believe it is, in Minnesota on Tuesday, June 26th.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go into hiding for a little while.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Okay, so where are you on the internet?
On the internet, you can find me most often on Twitter. I am CL Polk. You can find my website, which is clpolk.com. No surprises there. I have a Discord server, but it's not actually a public Discord server. I have a link to it on my Twitter account.
I'm not sure that people know what Discord is.
Discord is a cross between IRC, Slack, and Ventrilo, the voice chat service that gamers used to use. It's a service specifically for video game players to be able to get together to talk about games. However, it's proliferated. I'm on a knitting Discord server. there are a lot of writing-related Discord servers. I'm not actually on any of the big public ones. I'm on a private one that we're thinking about taking public. It's called Writers in Progress. And I have my own Discord server, which is Magpie on a Typewriter, which is mostly casual talk. I'm probably going to be opening that one to the public as well.
Okay. Very exciting. It has been a pleasure talking with you for Cooking the Books.
It's been great to be here.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Elliot, for keeping it real with the fountain pens, even though we're talking about food They both start with F.
I can always find an excuse to shoehorn things in.
Tune in next time to Cooking the Pens. When... No, we'll see you guys next month. We've got another great episode coming up. But right now, please do go and get your paws on a pre-order of Witchmark by Chelsea Polk.
This has been Cooking the Books, an interview series about food and fiction. Tune in next time for another interview.